don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking justice. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained justice.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Welcome, listener, to this week's edition of the So-Called Weaker Podcast. We're going to begin this week with a statement sent to us by our colleague Morris Brosnan. He's not here to read it out himself, so I'll do the honours. Morris explains that it is, quote, hugely disappointing not to be involved in this week's show, and he has indicated that he won't be coming back. Quote, I've had a brilliant year contributing to the So-Called Weaker Podcast. It is not a decision I take lightly. It is a decision that has been made for me. I think I'm left with no option but to step aside at this stage after a great year at the so-called weaker level, injury-free, and we have had a great championship this year. It was great to be part of such a brilliant hurling championship year. The general feeling among a lot of the public, friends and indeed members of our own club, county and community, would have said I had a very good chance of being involved in this episode. He goes on to wish Mick McCarthy and Mark Farley the very best of luck ahead of this week's show. Lads, what's your immediate reaction to that?
I've heard a rumour that Marty Morrissey is currently en route to Galway to do a one-on-one interview with Morris and his needlessly buttoned-down shirt.
For me, it's sour grapes. I mean, we got the gig. We were chosen to be on this week's so-called Weaker Podcast. And I think that instead of worrying about his place, he should be congratulating his colleagues who've got this job and not really undermine it for them by such obvious grandstanding.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you never know. You've seen it in the past from Morris, I think twice, should this podcast go to a replay, that there's a good chance he might get the replay.
Yeah, well, not after those kind of words. I think he's burned his own bridges there for this week's so called Weaker Podcast.
Hey, on the James McGrath thing, right, I'm looking here at a tweet by Barry McCarthy. Quote, this is the best GA story in years, just raw, unbridled egotism. And RT send Marty down with the camera crew to help him make an absolute show of himself. Fantastic entertainment. Is anyone going to disagree with that?
No, no. If somebody's there ready to kind of, you know, just sort of set the place on fire in a GEA world, Marty will be there to put the microphone in front of them and really add to it. I mean, we're going back to the 98 Clare saga. Marty very much at the forefront of that. I think Marty was there with Paddy O'Shea on holidays when the Kerry fans were animals. You know, like, Marty's going to be there with the microphone and you better be ready to stand by whatever it is you're going to say, because it's going to go big. It's going
to
go national.
One thing I was looking forward to was, like, I was like, Marty's going to have to challenge him on this. Like, what's this interview going to be like? Because, like I mean, even if you look at Newbridge or Nowhere with the interview with Alan Milton, you invited challenging him on that. I was like, but this, there's no way around this. You can't see the other side to it. What's going to happen? He can't just be like, yeah, it is. It's terrible, isn't it? It's terrible, 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 James. So, but rather than challenge him, I just watched the interview and it was like very, very short. It was very contrite. It was just like, he got his point across. And Marty's like, before I have to ask any difficult questions, I'm going to cut this and go back to my outro.
I don't know how you can challenge it. Like, it's just egotry on him on a remarkable scale. Just let him off and let him entertain the country, which he's pretty much done. And as you just joked at the beginning, most of these championship games, since we've gone to the All-Ireland Championship, most of the games have gone to replays. So this could have gone to a replay. So now he's deprived himself of getting that game.
Aside from the fact, now I don't know enough about hurling referees, so maybe you'll be able to fill us in on this.
Don't let me at it. I'll end up with Marty in front of me.
Is it not mad, right? Now, like, if someone else had done the speaking for him, is it not mad that James McGrath has not gotten an All-Ireland hurling final at this stage?
He's got two of them.
But they're replays.
Oh, they're still All-Ireland finals.
Yeah, but like, how has he never been picked?
What difference does it make if they're replays?
He wasn't the first choice to referee the All-Ireland hurling final that year. He was the second, given that he got the replay.
Yeah, but then the year, there was 2 years in a row where there were replays, and I think or 3 years in a row, and he got two of them. Like, that kind of almost naturally disqualifies him for the next year.
Yeah, but they were back in 2014.
2013 and 2015, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
12, 13, 14 were the 3 years ago. Yeah.
And he's never been chosen to referee. There's about what?
Well, maybe it's because he's the type of guy that goes on whinging about the fact that he's not getting the big games and putting up the, like, making a story about himself, which is the last thing the GEA need in a referee.
I agree.
But he's done this after the point.
Has he?
Yes.
Well,
he wasn't on RT6 until he wasn't chosen.
I think if a referee is in some way campaigning for a match, I think that's a dangerous place to be. I think we all agree that referees shouldn't be famous and shouldn't be people that have egos or make it about themselves. And I think that's always a sign of a referee that lets an occasion get to them. And
yeah, maybe, you know? But like, again,
he's been judged. Like, I mean,
he's,
you hardly think, like,
it's, after the fact.
Yeah, okay, but you hardly think he's like, what do you think is behind this? Are they not just choosing who they think is the best man for the job? You can't just say it's someone's turn.
Yeah,
you know, like, David Goff's going to get the football this year. How many All-Ireland finals has David Goff got? Loads, like, yeah, a lot. I don't know the number. I didn't have an answer for that. I wasn't expecting one from you. But like, it's because he deserves them, you know. Now, I'm not sure if James Owens necessarily does or whatever, you know, and Fergal Horgan's the other person in the mix here, and he had a terrible semi-final. But, you know, like, whatever, you know. Yeah. Not, like, I'm sorry, but nobody cares.
And we now know if James McGrath had got it, he would very much be refereeing the occasion rather than the game, because he's obsessed with the occasion. But anyway, we've probably given his comments too much credence.
He probably did a good job in the All-Ireland final replay in 2013. Was the day that I tried to storm out 5 minutes into the second half, and my sister asked me to please sit down.
What?
Was that an angry James McGrath?
That was, well, yeah, at the time it was. I decided in my momentary wisdom that the GAA were going to do everything in their power to make sure Cork got back into this game. And it was probably like 2-3 decisions over the course of a minute or two.
You went to storm out of an All-Ireland final.
Well, I don't know how far I really got. I stood up.
No, but how far? It's not. Even the act of standing up is incredible. Have you ever sought psychological help?
I'm much better these days. Lost the head once at the Clare Galway.
What's the biggest level game, Cavan game, that you would consider storming out of?
I've never.
Would you go after like a round three national league game?
No, what I nearly stormed out of the Cavan down game out of sheer boredom.
Okay, that's championship. I wouldn't abandon Longford Championship.
I don't know what to say. I wasn't going to storm out. I never actually left. I'm going to get up and leave this game.
I one time walked down to the bottom of the terrace to walk out and made it as far as the bottom and then stood against one of the railings and watched the rest of the game on my own.
That's mad.
Yeah.
Now, as we know, the hurling has enraptured the nation over the last couple of weeks. And as we have been accentuating on this podcast, the game is, well, it's kind of struggling to survive in many parts of the country. So we are going to talk to Martin Fogarty, the GAA's National Hurling Development Manager, to find out what the GAA are doing about it. Plus, we'll be guessing the spreads and looking ahead to the All-Ireland Football semi-finals. But Mark, you, with our friends at Sure, have been crunching numbers. I'm going to hit us with some stats.
I'm going to hit you with some stats. Hit me with your best shot. Is that the song? Sorry, cut that out.
Don't. No.
So I've been looking at a couple of different ones from Sure. With regard to Monaghan especially, was just their record in Croke Park. The fact that we were even like talking about when they were playing Galway, it was like, oh, they're not in Croke Park. They're, you know, they've every chance once they, but they obviously beat Kildare this year. But aside from that, they seemed to, in my memory, have a pretty stinking record. And it's definitely going to be important when it comes to Tyrone, because it can beat Tyrone all around Ulster, but they just seem to struggle when it comes to Croker. So Sure provide us with stats for the last 10 years from 2009 for each of the four teams. And actually Monaghan have only the second worst record. So Monaghan have played 8 times in Croke Park.
These are championship games now, are they?
Might include league as well, I think.
Yeah, okay. League as well, yeah.
So they've played 8 times. They've won 3. They have a 38% win rate. Galway have played 6 times in Croke Park in the last 10 years. They've only won once. And I think you might remember that game. It was a few weeks ago against Kerry.
Yeah. Wow.
So they have a 17% win record.
Okay.
God. They had a lot of... You just wonder about how relevant that is, because Galway are just such a different team now that at their worst, they were kind of stumbling into Croke Park a lot of the times, making the quarterfinal. I remember they lost to Cork. Do you remember when Meehan hit the crossbar or scored a late goal?
I think that's nearly all the other game. Like every other game nearly has been in the last couple of years. They've had the Kerry game. They've had the league final this year. The league final last year.
Yeah.
They had Kerry in the quarterfinals last year. So there's 4 straight off the bat. And then the Cork game. And I can't remember what the other one was.
Kerry in the quarterfinals in the rain. In 2009? I think it was 2009.
Now, guess who has the best record in Croke Park?
If this is a competition, I'm going to buzz in and say Dublin.
Dublin. 91% of the games that they've played in Croke Park have won in the last 10 years. 48 out of 53, which is madness itself.
A slightly bigger sample size as well. Yeah.
Jeez, next week, can we go to Shure and say, like, calculate how many times Longford have played in Croke Park ever? It's probably less than 53.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And then Tyrone have won 8 out of 15, so just slightly better than 50%, 53% win record overall over the last 10 years.
What did they tell us? That Dublin have a massive home advantage because they play all their games there and everybody else has played there between 13 and 6 times.
I would say so. Yeah. And maybe we're stretching it, but Galway and Monaghan have got better. You know, they've played in Croke Park a few times in a row and they've got better. Like, most of the wins have come in the latter part of that sequence.
Yeah, well, that's
the win percentage rate follows the exact same trend as the amount of times played. So Galway have played the least. They've won the least. Well, percentage win of wins is the least. Monaghan, then Tyrone, then Dublin. But another interesting one that Shore provided us with are opposition kickouts. Now, this I was thinking of with regard again to Monaghan and Tyrone, because these are two great. Well, I think Morgan maybe might have the odd slip up, like if you look at last week's goal. But these are two great goalkeepers in terms of distribution of kickouts, and it's just going to be interesting in what way the battle goes. Because both teams play a very similar style of game, except that Monaghan tend to push up on kickouts the odd time, whereas Tyrone rarely ever do. So it's just looking at the percentage of opposition kickouts won by each county so far in this year's championship.
Okay.
So unsurprisingly, Tyrone are bottom. They've only won 24% of opposition kickouts so far in this year's championship. Monaghan are second bottom. They've only won 28%. So they're actually, I don't think, maybe they're not pushing up as much as I thought they were. And then Galway have won 34% and Dublin have won 38%.
Oh, wow.
But it is an interesting thing, even if you look, compare Galway to Tyrone, like Galway are getting get lots of abuse for being so defensive. And like there is the argument, like it's pretty much impossible to play a blanket defence and push up and kick out at the same time because it contradicts each other. Like what, if you want to get men behind the ball and get back as quickly as possible, why push everyone up? And then even just in terms of actual fitness, you literally have to run up and down the field every play. So for Galway, it is a slight differentiation compared to the way that Tyrone and Monaghan played it. They do seem to pressurise kick out a lot more.
Yeah, and so Dublin leading those stats as well.
Dublin lead all the stats.
Yeah. Go on, give us some hurling stats that Dublin won't be involved in.
They won't be. This isn't a team involvement. This is something that... So watching the match on Sunday and the matches the week before, you're thinking to yourself, there's an awful lot of sideline cut attempts over the bar. You know, for like Joe Canning will get maybe one or two a game. He might miss one or two a game. But everybody else is trying them as well. Kelly got one in the first game, missed another one. Duggan missed a few. And you're thinking to yourself, like, why has this suddenly become such a big part of the game? And is it this like weapon as much as you think it was? But I got some stats from Shore that are really interesting, because on attempts at goal from a sideline cut between 2012 and 2017, 22.6% of them went over the bar. Not an amazing stat. Attempts have gone way up this year and the percentage has gone down.
Oh.
Yeah. 2018, 17.6% of attempts over the bar. And as I was saying to Mark yesterday when we were talking about this stat, that I think sums up why this is a ridiculous tactic in a game that's developing so much. It's a brilliant skill, really, really hard to do. The tactics in hurling are getting so, you know, detailed and advanced that this is just something that managers just seem to let people do as a shot to nothing. Which it isn't, because you can develop a possession, you're in the opposition half, you go and attack. Whereas you wouldn't take a shot with a 17.6% chance of a successful outcome out the field. That's a pot shot. Hmm. That's a really wasteful possession. You wouldn't do it. So why do they do it from the sideline? I don't understand. It's something they've just been noticing. So we asked Shore to kind of give us some stats on it. And I think it bears it out. You know, I'm really shocked at how low that was. I would have thought it would be about 30%.
You'd expect it to go up, yeah. Yeah, I think it just goes to show. What that tells me is that it's such a ludicrous skill.
It's a ludicrous skill. And that's why it's nice to see.
Yeah.
But when you're watching a game and we're getting to like All-Ireland semi-final stages here, or the final in a couple of weeks, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, it's a brilliant thing to see. Joe scored one in the final last year that we had this amazing footage of from somebody in the second row, yeah. And you just see the trajectory. And like, it's such a bloody hard thing to do. I don't know how they do it. And it's lovely to see, and we do want to see it. But from a competitive point of view, it's not worth it.
Yeah. You need Joe Canning to do it, or you know,
yeah, like I mean, a few others can do it as well, like, but like Mark Coleman can do it for Cork, but like, it's just, I don't know, it's a low percentage shot, yeah. And it really surprised me how low it was.
Where do you, sorry, no, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much. Where do you stand on the idea that has been floated by some people that it is such a great skill that it should be rewarded with 2 points?
Yeah, I mean, they trialled it out, I think, a couple of years ago in the league, and, you know, it kind of went nowhere. But was it in the league? Maybe it was in lower competitions. But I'd have nothing against that. And I think that's kind of how you go with it then. Then it's worth the shot. Then it becomes like the 3-point shot. And it does seem to be a lot more sidelines in general. I don't know whether it's just the way teams are playing wider and stuff like that, that the ball seems to be going out. It's like the only breaks in play at the moment are sideline cuts. But, you know, so maybe that's something to keep the skill part of the game. Because eventually managers are going to figure this out and say, find a free man and start a new possession.
Yeah.
Because it's not worth a 20% chance of a point.
Mark?
I think the same for 45s in football. I don't know. We must get the stats for inter-county football. Now, it might be really harsh, and it is improving year upon year, especially with goalkeepers getting involved now. But I know with club football, I would, from this is me now just plucking stats out of the air from my own memory. But
this isn't provided by Shore official systems.
Sure, in no
this
way.
This is provided by Mark's Waters. I would say that the conversion rate on 45s at club football in Cavan is less than 50%, easily. I would say possibly 20, 30%.
But they always shoot.
And I would say the conversion rate in a 45 that is taken short and given straight back to the person who took the 45 to pop over the bar is about 90%. I rarely ever see that not result in a score. I can't actually even think of an example of where it happened. And yet people just still go for 45s. It beggars belief sometimes. Like, there are players who will, you see, it seems to be either one or the other. You'll either have a player who'll score nearly every 45 to take, like Dean Rock or someone,
yeah,
or someone who'll miss.
It's a hard free to get. And you look at when Tyrone were racing back into the game, and I think that they'd just gone ahead. I think they just got the goal and maybe just gone ahead, and Murphy missed the 45. And like, you know, he'd be someone you would trust with them. But you're just thinking to yourself, like, what Donegal really needed at that point was something to calm them down. And maybe even, like, you know, you'd be mad thinking you wouldn't trust Michael Murphy to score that point. But maybe if they went through possessions and worked the score, took another 2 minutes and slowed Tyrone's momentum down. And they didn't. And Tyrone went up and got another 2-3 points. And the game was kind of, all of a sudden, there was a 4-point game and it was kind of over, you know?
Yeah, well,
really,
like,
quickly.
Again, inter-county level players, defenders are going to be much more awake to a club level, but you generally always get, because the person at the 45, everyone stands, you know, whoever's meant to be marking them usually stands hands up pointlessly 15 metres away, doesn't see someone making a short run. Person makes a short run, gets it, gives it back, whoever takes 45, pop it over the bar.
Can I briefly ask, there's a great piece in the Sunday Times on Sunday by Dennis Walsh analysing the drop in goals in hurling. Because it's slightly easier to score points now, there's less of an incentive to go and score goals. He recommended rewarding goals at 4 points. Is that something that you would like to see brought into the great
game? No, I don't think so.
There's also a good Chris Urin quote, and he said if it was up to him, he'd make hurling goals only.
Wow. Very different sport, I would say.
Would you want? Is that a better or worse sport?
In Christy Ring's day, where people would still blindly play in the exact same positions, no matter how many, even if there was no points, that might work. But nowadays, sure, why wouldn't you just play 12 men on the edge of the square defending the goal at all times?
There was an awful lot of ground hurling, so most of it was just basically he was asked, saying they should change the game to hockey.
Oh, right, okay.
If that, like, it would have been just equivalent.
Some of the clips of Christy Ring in the game, the week two of the game that was on Monday night, were just unbelievable.
Yeah,
that show was fantastic.
I haven't seen episode 2 yet.
But like, the majority of that is just lads taking shots off the ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's very few coming out of the hand.
Watch the part where Mick Mackey invented the solo run. It was all ground hurling, and he just one day went, sure, I'm just going to do this now. And everybody went, what the fuck's going on here?
And also, St. Kieran's College? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Invented the hand pass.
Seemingly, they invented definitely practicing the hand pass and was like, they're practicing hand passes, lads. He's got off his head. What's going on?
They're trying to keep possession.
All of those stats came from the official statistic partner of the GA, which is, of course, Sure. Mark's Waters is neither a healthcare product nor affiliated with
the GA. It is open for sponsorship, though.
Now, as we've been talking about the game, everyone's been falling in love with hurling over the last couple of weeks, but it is kind of struggling across large swathes of the country, as we have been pointing out in this podcast for a few weeks. So earlier on today, I spoke to the National Hurling Development Manager of the GAA, Martin Fogarty, to hear about what the GAA are doing about it. And I started by asking him whether the perception that hurling is on its knees across much of the country is a fair one.
Well, that's a true reflection of what is, of the reality it is. I mean, in the stronger counties, the game is, sure, I suppose it's at a phenomenal level. You know, you just have to look at the last couple of weekends there and you see the level that the game has gone to, and, you know, the standard is mind-boggling. But it's not like that everywhere. And, you know, I suppose not fair to call them the real true hurling people, but what I would call maybe the diehards are in, you could probably pick 15 counties, and, you know, there are 15 counties in the country that have less than 10 clubs with an adult hurling team. So that will kind of give you the picture. And if my memory serves me well, I think we have 8 counties that would have less than 5 clubs with an adult hurling team. So, I mean, that paints the picture. If you're in a county where you just have 3 adult hurling clubs, well, then that presents its own problems. And that is the situation where, you know, to get a meaningful games program is a huge obstacle for a start. Mm. And that's why, you know, initiatives like the Tán League, you know, you have the adult Tán League, and as I said last weekend, we had the Tán Óg, where you're bringing counties together. Now, you know, from their end of it, it's a huge burden in with regards to travel. But it just shows you the value of the people that are working at the coalface. You know, they're tremendous people. They're prepared to get into their cars and hire their buses and travel long, long distances to get games for their players. And, you know, that is the reality and that is the challenge. Now, in the middle of those places, I have to take my hat off to the people, because they're tremendous people. So, like, if you're working in a county where you have maybe 3 clubs, 4 clubs, everything is a huge problem. You know, a games program is a problem, challenge matches is a problem, getting enough players to make teams is a problem. But these people are plowing away. They're doing the best they can, and they're doing very well. And, you know, if we were just to look at, take away the Joe McDonough, because that the competition that involved teams that are at a high level. But if you take the Christy Ring, the Rackard, and the Mar competitions. And if you look at the counties that are competing in those finals, and if you're looking at the standard, it's excellent when you take into consideration where they're coming from, and when you take into consideration the small amount of hurling that they get and the small number of games that they get. So, you know, hurling is on its knees in so many places, but there are tremendous people there trying to keep it alive. And, you know, our aim and our hope, you know, when I say our, I mean, you know, the GA Hurling Fraternity, Hurling Development Committee, the various provincial games managers, the various hurling people in the counties. You know, our aim is to try, first of all, to consolidate what's happening, you know, to keep the clubs that are playing, to keep them upskilled and to keep them involved, to keep them enthused. And then, which is a harder job, to try and grow a few more little pockets in areas like that. And if you have a county that has maybe 4 clubs, you know, long term, and how long is long, you'd be hoping that 4 can grow to 8, 5 can grow to 10. So that's, you know, they're the challenges that we're faced with.
Yeah. Why, Martin, are there so many counties with so few hurling clubs, as you explained? Is it purely down to a relatively small population that cannot compete, that cannot have a healthy and thriving Gaelic football and hurling scene, or is there something else behind it?
No, it's nothing to do with numbers. I mean, sure, if you just look at Offaly as an example, look at Laois up beside me, the 2 counties there, they're small counties, and they play both games. And you know, in particular years, they can be very, very good at both codes. And but what it comes down to, I suppose, really, is hurling is a difficult game to play. You know, without a shadow of doubt, it is difficult. And you know, in the early stages, if a person doesn't have a certain level of skill at any game, they're not really going to stick to it that long. So hurling is difficult to play. And, you know, the next thing then is, obviously, there's equipment. You know, you need hurls, you need helmets, you need slitters. So you have all that. And, you know, those little things create obstacles. And probably one of the biggest obstacles is, I suppose, the confidence of people to actually coach teams. Like, you would have, particularly people would say that are not from a hurling background, they don't have the confidence that they can actually coach the game, which is, unfortunately, it's a myth, because some of the great coaches throughout the country that I would have met never played a game at all themselves, but they had interest and had enthusiasm. And, you know, like any sport, if you can provide a facility and have the enthusiasm, the game kind of looks after itself. But, you know, notwithstanding, they are obstacles, and people are nervous about taking on the coaching of the game. Then, of course, you have, I suppose, history. You know, you have a county where traditionally there wasn't any hurling. So that's a problem in itself. Like any sport, if people haven't grown up with it, if it hasn't been in an area, it's a big job to try and get it started. You know, you can mention confidence is one thing, equipment is another thing, but, you know, the biggest challenge of all is to get people. You know, to get a handful of people that'll say, right, here's a green field, here's an area where there's no hurling. You could say, like, how many people do you need to get it up and running? That could be one, but that would want to be a super person.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at maybe getting a half a dozen people or 10 people together that'll say, look, we'll do our best, we'll try and get a go and get it started. And then things can take off.
Yeah. So what are the GAA doing, Martin, to overcome some of those obstacles that you mentioned? Perhaps tradition is more difficult to tackle than the other two.
Well, sure, I suppose what we're doing is, through the network of games development officers, you know, who are in every county, they're trying to spread the gospel as best they can. You know, we say if you go back even and look at something like the cool camps, you're trying to give players a taste of the game maybe at a cool camp. You're trying to get into maybe schools where there was no hurling before and trying to give them a chance to taste the game and get a liking for it. And, you know, you have centres there where there'll be hurling on, there'll be little blitzes on, there'll be little different initiatives on throughout the year where, again, you're hoping players can come in and taste the game. But ultimately, you're hoping that volunteers, again, will take it on in a particular area, will have a look for the game, and we'll say, all right, we're going to get a hub going here, or we're going to get a club going here to start it off. And, you know, that is the biggest challenge. And you just can't, you know, no organisation can just create people.
Mm.
You know, you can put full-time people into the counties, and we have full-time people in all the counties, but that's not the answer. You know, they can just, I suppose, they can sow the seed, but they can't, you know, you can't have a full-time person come in and start up a new club and keep it running for the next 20 years.
Yeah,
you're ultimately hoping to get volunteers.
Yeah, I think where most of us would have been inured in Gaelic games, Martin, was in from primary school onward. Now, I'm from Longford, so it was mainly just football I played in primary school. And we spoke a few weeks ago to the Louth hurling manager, Philip O'Brien, and he talked about how the number of clubs in Louth and in his own native Meath were dwindling. And he said that you have to, you know, sow the seed, as it were, in primary schools, and called on the GAA to fund coaches that go directly into primary schools. Now, excuse me. Now, obviously, there are games development officers, but, and correct me if I'm wrong in this.
Yeah, is that there last for a second.
Oh, sorry. Did you lose me altogether?
I lost you there for a little minute. Can you just go back on that?
Yeah, I will, yeah. So we were speaking to the Louth hurling manager, Philip O'Brien, he's originally from Meath, and he spoke about the number of clubs dwindling in both Louth and Meath, and said that the GAA should centrally fund coaches to go into primary schools where the game can take root and then hopefully blossom from there. I understand the game development officers are they funded from Croke Park? Are they funded by county boards? And is Philip's proposal feasible?
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're mentioning there is happening.
Okay.
You know, every county has full-time people, and it is happening. Some counties are more than others. Some counties, they would be leaning more towards hurling, and some counties would be leaning more towards football. But the bottom line is, they are in every county, and they are doing their best. And, you know, the funding comes from various places, but I suppose ultimately it basically comes from Croke Park. In some situations, you might have certain clubs I contribute a certain amount, and either Croke Park or the provincial council will contribute more. But I mean, by and large, it's all coming out of the same pot. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of these people throughout the country in every county. But it's not that simple either. For example, if I'm working as a GDA in a county, and you say, right, we want to get into the schools, well, you have to be welcomed in first of all. You know, you just can't walk in the door. So, you know, the opening has to be there in the school, and if it is, we are delighted to go in and help out. And that is happening, and that is, it would be one of our aims, I suppose, from headquarters, is that theoretically every child gets an opportunity to play the game. But, you know, that's theoretically. If you've got a school that don't want, I suppose, Gaelic games in the school, well, then that stops there. So then you're going down a different avenue where you're trying to get a little hub up and running, or you're trying to get maybe a football club that might commence a little bit of hurling and get it started that way. But there is tremendous support there from the GA. You know, anywhere there's a whiff of a bit of an initiative, the GA will be coming right in behind it there to help out as best they can.
Yeah. From a county to county basis or level, Martin, how much of a competitor is Gaelic football?
How much what?
Of a competitor is Gaelic football in counties to getting hurling started?
Well, sure, look, I suppose the GA, you know, has the two games. You know, we're not a hurling organisation, we're not a football organisation. You know, there's handball and rounders there as well, not to be forgetting. But looking at the two main codes, the hurling and the football, again, it's traditional, obviously, in counties. In the strong hurling counties, the football, I suppose, is the Cinderella, and in the strong football counties, the hurling is the Cinderella. But there probably is a little bit of education to be done there with people in that, you know, the two games can sit side by side fairly well, and they can actually support each other fairly well. And, you know, if we look at the tremendous example there of Schlochneil up in Derry, a tiny area that, you know, not only do they play the two games, but they have become the very best in the country at both. You know, they've been in All-Ireland final there in club football, and they were a smidgen away from being in the hurling and All-Ireland Camogie Champions as well. And that's working out of a tiny, tiny pocket of players. So if you wanted an example of how they can sit together and play well, that is your example. So, you know, but again, you have all sorts of challenges. You know, you have players maybe that prefer one vote to the other. Unfortunately, you can have coaches, and whatever code they're looking after, they don't allow or they don't want their players playing the other code, and that's a pity. You know, and that's not just a football thing, that can be a hurling thing as well in certain counties. So, to try and get that education across the people, and to try and get, I suppose, to be thinking as a player, to be putting the player first, you know, that should be the priority.
Across
so,
this,
you know, in a club situation, to try and get people to say, look, if we have a squad of hurlers and a squad of footballers, if there can be an overlap, well, then the hurling can get stronger and the football can get stronger. Whereas, you know, unfortunately, some individuals might look at it the other way and think that if their hurlers kick football, it weakened them and vice versa.
Yeah. Across this podcast, Martin, we've interviewed a lot of hurlers, particularly those playing in the McDonagh and the Ring and the Racker and the Maher Cups. And there was a frustration about those competitions and how they have been promoted by both the GA and the media. We'll talk about the media in a minute, but is there more that the GA can do to promote these games? Because, like, for example, like the McDonagh Cup final was fixed while it was in Croke Park. It was the same time as the Munster Hurling final. There were teams that won the Ring Cup asked to go and play promotion playoffs like a week later. Like, is there an acceptance that more can be done to promote these competitions as important All-Ireland championships by themselves?
Well, you know, to be fair about it, every effort is being made to do it. But when you sit down and see, you know, you might have something in your head you want to do, but when you sit down and try and do it, that can be a problem. Like if you take, for example, if you forget about the McDonagh Cup for a moment, but if you take the Leinster final, hurling and the Munster, they were on the same day. Now, it's easy for me to say that that was the terrible pity, and personally it was, because I would have liked to have gone to the two of them. However, you know, the hands are tied then when it comes to fixtures. So that you know, there are problems there, some things that can't be easily solved. Now, but if we look at, if we take the McDonagh Cup, for example, that was played as a curtain raiser to the Leinster final. And, you know, that was huge. That was a huge boost for that competition, because it gave it a bit of status and it gave it, you know, a big day. You see, you take the Ring Record and Mar competition, and it's great to have them for a start, because what it means is every county can compete and every county can have a realistic chance of maybe getting to a final and playing the final in Croke Park. And that is tremendous. Now, some years, say, maybe they're being played a little bit early. However, it's not so simple. You know, I would love to see, for example, just would say maybe the Christy Ring final maybe being as a curtain raiser to the Leigh McCarthy final. However, it might not be that simple, because if you're looking at maybe dual players on some of these teams, you know, they may not be available later in the year if they have to try and play the two codes. So you have those kind of things. But definitely the aim would be to try and get those competitions onto the highest stage possible. You know, even recently there have been, you know, mentions of possibly playing them before All-Ireland semi-finals. Possibly having a full, you know, the weekend of the All-Ireland, having a weekend of hurling. But all of these things are grand in theory, and, you know, we would like to see them. But when you sit down and try and make them happen, there can be many, many obstacles. But I think they're definitely going in the right direction. Which at the moment now, in the hurling, you know, every county has a realistic chance of having a big day and getting to a final between the McCarthy, the McDonagh, the Ring Record and Mar. And again, if I look at Sligo there and the one the Mar there this year, and, you know, it was a tremendous boost to them. Donegal won the Record, I think. You know, and again, based on the few clubs they have and based on the bit of work that they can do, it was a day in Croke Park for them, and they got great out of it. So, you know, but it's trying to get the balance, and I'm not a fixtures person, but trying to get the balance with fixtures and clubs and the two codes is a huge challenge. And you will find that in, with, say, I suppose, in particular, the Ring Record and Mar counties, they're probably looking at a lot of dual players.
Yeah.
You know, again, even if you look at, with, say, the Derry team, for example, they have not only have the dual Schlochneil players, but they have dual inter-county players. So, you know, to sit down and just take one competition in isolation is just not possible.
Yeah. Talking to the players from these competitions as well, they were just as frustrated by the media's failure at times to promote these competitions. Like, there were some weeks that, for example, the Sunday game didn't read out McDonagh Cup results, and it was difficult to find these results, and they weren't rarely on television. Yeah. Is that something that frustrates you sometimes, the media coverage of these lower...
Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. But, you know, but it's beyond our control. You know, but again, you see, you suppose when you have the lower divisions, I suppose, you know, the broad interest as much is not there. And that is the challenge, and that is the problem. But it does frustrate us, but there's not much we can do about it. And you have to suck it up. You know, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. I think the Saturday here of the Ring Record and Mar finals, you know, I don't think the results were even on the news that night, whereas, you know, all the results will be there. But that's what you're up against, and there are problems, I suppose, that are not easily solved. I mean, you cannot force the media to report on what you want them to report on. And I suppose people in the media, needless to say, they're probably going for the news that's going to be, I suppose, interesting to most people. So what can you do? Only keep paddling up against the current. Keep working at it.
Yeah. Martin, come here. Thanks so much for your time. You've been really generous with it.
No problem at all. No problem.
Crowded us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
So thanks to Martin for his time. Some interesting comments, especially on media coverage there, although international man of the media Mark Farrelly is sitting here smouldering with a hot take on why media coverage isn't really very important at all.
Official contrarian. This isn't...
Sorry, is that unfair? Am I misrepresenting your views?
Yeah. I basically
you are Gavin, yeah.
I basically vocalized or verbalized the thought that I had when I was in the time it took me to walk from putting the code in on the gate to get into the office, which was what, about 5 seconds? That was how long I had had the thought. So this isn't some staunch view I've developed and I won't be moved on, but I just thought we'd tease it out.
You know James McGrath.
No, we do, exactly. We'd just tease it out here and see. And it's probably not as, it probably doesn't actually apply as much to hurling, because I think you definitely need the media coverage to grow it within your own county. So like, if you're a Westmeath or a Carlow or blah, 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 you need that sort of, oh Jesus, you know, you get the Fairweather fans involved and then it become hardcore. But if you look at somewhere like, yeah, the counties we're talking about in football, and if you're like a tiered championship, we've talked so much about a tiered championship and we shouldn't do it because look at the coverage. Should we get no coverage? There's not on the Sunday game as it is, blah, blah, blah. 2 points of thinking of that. One is, if you're getting no coverage already, then how much worse can it get? Because no coverage minus no coverage is still no coverage. And then secondly, what do you care? Like, you're getting the media coverage in the place that you're representing. Like, it's not, no one's given out saying that wherever the fucking Anglo-Celt isn't covering Cavan football or whatever. Like, all these places, any local newspaper, you've got podcasts popping up all over the shop. You know, you've got like the We Are Offaly, We Are Loud, any of these.
The so-called Weaker Podcast.
The so-called Weaker Podcast.
Yeah, which Mark basically invented and now is saying it's all a load of shite. What's the point?
It's a good point. I didn't think that through yet. But like, do you need, like, is it too, like, is the price too high for, like, for you saying, right, I don't want the possibility of winning whatever we call it, the Christie Ring Football Cup.
the Mick O'Connell Cup.
The Mick O'Connell Cup. I don't want the possibility of winning something, getting a big day at Grove Park, getting a final. How could I not think of one famous for footballer? Not one, just one completely blank.
Probably the only one I could think of is Christy Ring, who, one, we were just talking about, and two, already has a cup named after.
And three, is a hurler.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Like, yeah.
Couldn't think of Paddy O'Shea, Mick O'Connell, any emergency.
Anyone who's ever been to Kerry.
Yeah. So anyway, the Sean Oates Player Trophy, right? You have a chance of winning it. And it's like, no, we're not going to take that chance for the possibility that we might play someone half decent and beat them in the provincial championships or in a qualifier and get 30 seconds on the Sunday game. Like, okay, who, like, realistically, if you thought about it, like, who, why would I, what do I care of, like, why some lad in the opposite end of the country to me is paying attention to what we're doing? Surely success within your own county, and the fact that you invariably then will get a bit of media coverage if you got to the final of, say, one of these championships, if it was, I don't know if it's three tiers or two tiers or whatever in football. Why would, like, what difference does it make?
Mick, what difference does it make?
Do I have to answer this first? Like, you kind of qualified it enough there that I don't have a massive, massive issue with you. Like, I mean, the biggest one was the kind of promoting the sport and getting some sort of attention for what you're doing to get that support and get people kind of interested and going along to games and it growing the sport in your county. You're saying that that's not going to be the case with football, say in Down, for example. They're going to have the support they have anyway. They're going to have the coverage that they have. It's fair enough, but I do think there's a general kind of level of respect that these guys are working as hard, are playing the same game in the same competition as everybody else, and do deserve to be acknowledged for that in a way that, like, and, like, you know, I don't want to pat ourselves in the back because it's nothing to do with us, but, you know, I think one thing that you've proved this year in doing this show and just proved to ourselves even in just kind of looking up, like, the stories, there's these stories of these people are interesting. And there is an element of media coverage that is somewhat lazy because it's like, right, let's cover the famous people in Mayo, because everybody already knows who they are and we don't have to do any groundwork in explaining to people who they are. And sorry, Mayo and Kerry and Dublin and, you know, everybody else. Like,
no, let's keep abusing Mayo. Go on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'll have a go at Roscommon in a minute and it'll be back on my side. But, like, I do think that there is that element of, like, do you know what? We've done well here and we've fucking worked our ass off. And we've won this game, or we've got closer than we should have in this game, and nobody knows about it. And I think that's a fair enough point. And I think from, you know, the messages that we get about, like, giving you know, these weaker counties a voice, I think it's really appreciated. And I do understand what you're saying, like maybe they shouldn't care, but they do care. And it's human nature.
Yeah.
It's human nature to kind of get your fair dues and want it.
My argument, and I say it again, it's an argument. It's not really an argument because it's just the thought I've had. I haven't thought I might end up agreeing with you in the end of it. But is that I agree with all of that, but that doesn't follow any kind of logical conclusion that you shouldn't have a second tier championship. Because firstly, I'm not denying there are all these stories should be covered, and there are brilliant stories and blah blah blah. We should get all the media coverage. They're right in saying that they deserve more, but they're not getting it. So what are you actually gaining from not having a tier championship? It's like,
but I disagree on that, because you may say they're not getting it, but while they're in the same competition as big teams, they have the potential of getting it. For example, Longford will be on TV because they play Dublin in the Leinster semi-finals, and while that might not seem a big thing to some people, like county boards still have to raise money, and they do that by selling naming rights to stadiums and putting logos on shirts. All that helps. Like, I don't know if that money comes in as easily as it would if you were in a second or third tier championship with no guarantee of any media coverage nationally. So I think there are those tangibles. There are also intangibles that Mick raised on, is that like looking for validation externally is a part of human nature. It's how we're built. And I don't think like we feckin' want it as badly from people as hurlers and footballers do. And when they are running up Mucky Hills in December and they're doing just as much work as the elite level hurlers and footballers, I think it's only natural to want a bit of recognition for that from outside.
A lot of these places also have very big natural disadvantages. So while Dublin can afford to have 30 people on their backroom staff, have, you know, 14 sponsors and have all the money in the world to do all the different things, these lads are sometimes raising money themselves to get like a measly 20 grand from their main sponsor, and they're more involved and they almost deserve, you know, like they do more for to keep the GAA alive in their county than any one person could possibly do in Dublin. That's no offense, that's no slight on anyone in there, it's just that it's a much bigger organization. And it's like, we ignore them to talk about how great one team is that is just like, that have all the advantages in the world and have all the backup.
But again, this is what's happening already. And they're not, so like, it's one of the things of insanity is doing the same thing every time and expecting a different result. Mm-hmm. These are all arguments. Like, so the argument against having a tiered championship, for someone that, Gavin's, what you're saying is actually great points to that. But like, say if that one is like, this is an argument against having a tier championship because what's happening already will still happen.
Yeah, no, I'm not against the tier championship. Yeah. I didn't realize that was this argument, though. The argument originally was, why do weaker county players care about media coverage? So you're kind of saying it doesn't exist anyway, no, so what difference does it make?
Not why do they care about it. It's more, why are we taking that as a serious reason to not have a tier championship? Because if you're not getting the media coverage as it is, you might as well, like Longford are a perfect example of this, because if it was a tiered championship this year, Longford could be the top two or three favourites to win it. So for there's every chance.
The top tier now or the second tier?
Sorry, the second tier, I should have specified. If we had that, now again, this is all hypothetical. If we had that, there is every chance that Longford would be, say you're playing them all off at the same kind of time of year, Longford would be going in this weekend into an All-Ireland or a half-Ireland semi-final. And like, surely that, even like some of the things like, say, sponsorship, blah, 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 there's going to be more interest among Fairweather fans in Longford for them playing a semi-final in Croker, say, had them as a curtain raiser to the other semi-finals, compared to playing Dublin in the first round of Croke Park of the Leinster Championship when they're going to get beaten by 21 points.
Yeah, but will there be more interest then Longford playing beating Derry again in the qualifiers, you know, like when it's like a bigger name, and
they'd be playing Derry in the
I know they would, but Mayo a few years ago then, or whatever it is, like, you know, that they have that chance to cause the upset that might be as good as an All-Ireland to some counties, you know, like that's I think as much their argument as media coverage. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't necessarily be mine. I'm just
that is definitely an argument. It's more this is just purely to that one where I was thinking, do you know what, you could nearly, if you're in a weaker county, just say, feck them. They're not going to pay attention to us. We might as well have a bit of crack and win something.
Right, I think we'll move on and talk about four counties who don't really get too much media coverage. Dublin, Galway, Tyrone and Monaghan in Guess the Spreads.
once again it comes here to the number two. Back once again to Conor Loftus. Once again through one marker to another. But back once again. Back once again there to Brian Stack. One back once again here. Back once again to Billy McMahon this time. There's a chance for Mayo now just to build it from the back once again. Back once again towards back once again. Back once again. Back once again.
Right, I've taken the editorial decision to abolish our old rule of where if you get double the points if you get the handicap bang on, because there's only two games. Is this fair?
Yeah.
Well, I don't care if it's fair because that's what's going to happen. Dublin and Galway on Saturday evening, Croke Park. Mick, what's the spread?
I haven't thought about this. I never do. So I could be way off, but I'm going to say Dublin -5.
Okay. Over to Mark.
Oh, that's what he was going for.
I have thought about this. And after much consideration, I had settled on Dublin -5. I don't think it's going to be Dublin -5.
You can do Dublin -5 if you want.
Bring it to the replay.
I really think it's exactly Dublin -5. It's not even a case of, I'll go one up and I'll go one down. I genuinely think it's going to be nailed on Dublin -5.
Just my original thought was going to say -4 and I bumped it to -5. So just so we're there, that's on record. But I'm obviously sticking with my choice.
So nailed on Dublin -5.
I'm going to go Dublin -5 and we'll push it all to the last game.
Cool. Dublin -6 is the answer.
Wow. Thank God I didn't go for 4 then.
So Farrelly, while he's still in the competition, is wrong as well.
You take it. You know? I don't know, why did Galway not show up last week? What was the thinking behind
it? I suppose they didn't have to.
Yeah. You'd want to be in the fight. I put forward a theory early last week and everybody told me I was mad. It was Galway would have been better off resting the likes of Damien Comer and that, because you could see that coming down the line what they're going to risk injuring them, because they weren't going to win. They
definitely cared. I think you could, if you could see the facial expressions on every time Bradshaw was running out with the ball and getting tackled, getting fouled, it was bothering them that this was happening to them. I think it's a really bad, I think it's not going to work well for them psychologically. I don't know how they're going to lift themselves this week, you know?
I think the fact that it wasn't do or die, even subconsciously, it's like Monaghan had to win that game. Whereas Galway were like that probably against Kildare. And, you got the enthusiasm of the first match against Kerry. You're playing Kerry, blah, blah, blah. You're carrying all that in. You've had a bit of a rest from the Connacht final. Then come the Monaghan game, you're 2 weeks, two games in 2 weeks already. You're already through. It's just natural, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll affect them this weekend.
Well, they just had a week off, so it wasn't,
Does it matter, is Ayrton not going to win anyway?
Yes.
But Galway could be playing Throne.
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah.
I wouldn't back, though, Dublin -6.
You think Galway will better that?
They might do. I think Galway could lose by 6 lose by 5. It's not a great bet. I wouldn't put money on it.
That marks water speaking now.
They'll be always 3 points ahead for the whole game, and then they might stretch away in injury time.
Yeah.
Or the last 65 minutes on.
So that sounds like Dublin will go to the All-Ireland final, where they will play the winners of Tyrone and Monaghan. Mark, what's the spread?
Spread is Tyrone -1.
Okay. That's you're pretty damn sure of that.
Look,
that's because he looked it up earlier on.
I did not. I was fully sure it was Dublin -5 as well. So we saw how that went for me.
So you said Tyrone -1.
There was two things here you had to consider. One, who's the favourite? And two, what's the handicap? And it's not easy
it's
in either.
More profound now than you think. That logic.
and I stayed up at night over it. But Monaghan have beaten Tyrone already this year's championship. And
they have a shite record against him at Croke Park, though.
Yeah, so it's hard to know.
Can I just argue here that Mark is basically cheating? So he picks the same. He's sure he knows the second one. He knows I have to go last. There's nothing to come after this. I can't pick the same one. So he just picks the same as whatever I pick, regardless, for the first one, and basically tries to buy himself a victory, trusting his...
What I would say to that is you can pick the same as he picked, if you believe it.
It's pretty boring.
Because I have a very exciting tiebreaker set up.
Okay. Tyrone minus one.
The answer is Tyrone minus one.
Yeah, I knew it. Right. I couldn't. I was literally just conceding defeat if I went anywhere else. You
yeah,
know?
It's perfectly logical. I put a lot of effort there into trying to subtly influence you into thinking that Monaghan might be favourites.
No. Monaghan beat them, but I think do you know what I think has people betting on Tyrone is their performance against Dublin. Yeah. As much as like, and the way they're finishing games, if you add the Donegal and Dublin game together, like, but I think that there's a feeling out there that Tyrone are the second best team.
I still think that was it was the easiest handicap to call of the entire championship. That was going into Tyrone minus one.
Are Tyrone going to win this? Are we both?
No.
Are we all? Do you think Monaghan?
Said Monaghan all along. Yeah, we'll get the final.
Really? Wow. What did you have any rationale or is it?
The fact that Monaghan have already beaten Tyrone this year's championship, I think they're a better team.
Beat them handily.
Yeah, I think Monaghan have the possibility of mixing it up. I think they've played Tyrone, these two teams play each other so often, and we say, all right, Tyrone and Croke Park and blah, blah, blah. Monaghan lost Tyrone and Croke Park because Sean Kavanagh dragged Conor McManus down when he was straight through on goal.
That was years ago.
Yeah, but that's like, Monaghan would have beaten them that day.
They've lost to them in three quarterfinals, haven't they?
Yeah,
two.
But
two.
Yeah, and one of them was Tyrone, Dublin.
Yeah, and like one of them was that. Like, we're, you know, it's not then a record, and it's just like, oh, Monaghan and Tyrone. Yeah. You never know who's going to win this game in Croke Park. And the fact, like, yeah, Monaghan just have the ability to change it up, and I think that they've got in Conor McManus someone who can completely change the game on its head, but that Tyrone don't really have. Like, we're talking about Lee Brennan possibly being brought in there as someone who could start because he did so well against Donegal. But again, you wouldn't talk about Conor McManus as possibly starting because he's good. He's like the best forward, possibly the best forward in the country.
The way Tyrone play in the last 10 minutes of games, though, is phenomenal. That's actually great to watch.
Oh, they're fantastic.
They're so strange. Yeah. Like, I mean, it goes back to like even the Meath game in extra time. You watch like the way they finish, just the way they burst and attack like and just pop over points, create goal chances. They stretch defences so much, you know. So
that is one worry about Monaghan as well, that might freeze. Yeah. The Kerry kind of thing where they're like winning, going into the final stretch and all of a sudden nobody can put the ball over or give a simple hand pass.
Exactly, because you'd want the 4 or 5 point lead against Tyrone if you're not going to be scoring in the last 10 minutes because they will. They just will. We've seen it too many times to think it's not a trend.
Yeah. Are you your team at Tyrone?
I'd love Monaghan to win, and I think they're as good as them, but I feel like Tyrone are going to do it, you know. But I think I thought Tyrone were going to give Dublin a game in the semi-final last year, and they didn't, so maybe I just consistently overrate this team.
I think Tyrone have a much better chance of beating Dublin. So
no, we said that last year again.
Yeah. Yeah.
They couldn't beat them in Omagh or really even get close.
Yeah, but there's odds. I've seen odds, by the way, for Dublin to win 5 in a row. 6-5. Which PJ in the office said they're good odds. They're a bit short, like.
To win two All-Irelands.
Yeah.
It's not great.
I still fancy Offaly next year, I have to say.
Dublin could lose Saturday.
to come from nowhere.
Offaly through the qualifiers and beat Dublin in the final.
I think so, yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Galway Monaghan final this year, I have to say.
Come here, right, we have to solve this Titanic tussle. So I've got a very exciting tiebreaker. Start with you, Mick. I want to know who the third favourite for Footballer of the Year 2018 is in the betting at the moment.
Wow. Oh my. For Footballer of the Year. McManus.
Okay. Farley.
First man I thought of was Conor McManus.
Morris will tell you why that's a load of me bollocks, by the way.
I saw that actually. Yeah.
And he's actually right. Like, he's done it. Like, he's had one extremely good game and he's been decent in others, but his scoring from play, other than the Kerry game, has not actually been great at all. But the narrative at the moment would suggest to me that he's high in the betting, so I'll go third.
My thinking on this is that it still might be a Dublin player. Feck, I can't go with McManus again, can I? And push it to the fourth favourite thing.
The answer...
No, I'm not going with McManus. Wait, I'm going with McManus.
Ah, no, come on. This is the worst game ever. Like,
the answer is Conor McManus. At 8-1, which is actually impressive. Right, so let's...
Can you see the screen?
No, I said it. Once it went to me, I said I believe Conor McManus.
No, I'm just wondering because it...
Right, he's... You literally have to pick a different answer now this time around. Farrelly, you get first pick for the 10th favourite to win Footballer of the Year 2018.
10th favourite. Jesus.
Brian Howard.
Okay.
Mick. Rory Began.
Neither are right. Stephen
Clifton. Yeah, this is actually an awkward enough one, Gav. Because we have to pick. There's no up or down in this one. Can I go? Not Brian Howard.
Stephen Clifton at 21. Right, let's see. Oh, who's the favorite? Who's the favorite to be footballer of the year 2018?
Favorite footballer of the year 2018.
Mick gets to go first.
Oh God! It all depends on what happens now. Really. McCarthy, James McCarthy.
Okay. Over to Mark.
I think it's James McCarthy as well, but I'm not.
You're not allowed to say it.
I'm not allowed to say it. This isn't fair. Why does he get to go first every time I think I know what the answer is? James McCarthy. Kieran Kilkenny.
Kieran Kilkenny's right.
Yes!
5-2. Fenton, second favourite, 6-1.
Kilkenny's had two poor games.
McManus, 8-1, third favourite. Brian Howard, 10-1. James McCarthy, 14-1. Then you're Damien Comer, 16-1.
Jeez, that's mad. I thought I was taking a serious punt on Brian Howard being the 8th favourite, but he's actually far higher.
He's actually 4th, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
Oh, I feel disgusted.
I'm actually, thank God you got that right, because I didn't really know where to go.
You would have to go on
there.
The hurler to you.
That's all for this week's show, lads. Thanks very much.
That's exciting.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks, as ever, to Shure, the official statistics partner of the GA, for providing us with those stats earlier on.
Thanks to Morris as well for giving us something to put up on the dressing room wall before we come in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks to you for listening. Do get in touch. Tweet at bowls.ie. Email thegaffer@bowls.ie. Do please tell your friends about the so-called Weaker podcast, and do leave a rating and a review on iTunes, and subscribe as well. That's all for this week's show. We'll be back next week. Until then, take it easy.
What a victory.